Well, it's good to be together tonight to study the Word of God. We'll be in the book of Exodus, looking at our continuing view of the Exodus and the wandering in the wilderness. And tonight especially, we'll be looking at the design of the tabernacle, the building of the tabernacle, and all of the detail that goes into that. I think a really important lesson in light of its significance for us in the New Testament age, a point that's brought out very vividly in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament. So most of us probably have a good idea of what the tabernacle is, what it's about. We're going to try to take a little deeper dive than we normally would in thinking about the tabernacle tonight, but it's only one lesson, and there are a bunch of chapters in Exodus that cover all of this. We're going to start looking at 25 through 31, which are God's commands about the tabernacle, and then 35 through 39, the actual doing of what God said to do as far as getting it all together and building the tabernacle. So you have the same information twice, really, but it's God telling them what to do and then them doing what God told them to do. And then we learn that they did exactly what God told them to do. So that's a little repetitive, but good to know, right? But the tabernacle is important. It's the house of worship. And this is not forwarding for some reason. There we go. All right. It's the house of worship for the children of Israel in the wilderness and for almost 400 years after that, when they set it up at Shiloh, when they get into the promised land. So it becomes a very significant part of their relationship with God. In fact, that's really the design of it. The import of it as far as God designed it was that he says that I might dwell among them, that he could be there with them and they could have access in one way or another to him, to worship him, to honor him, and to know that he is their God. So the tabernacle is highly significant. We open chapter 25 of Exodus and verses 1 and 2. The Lord spoke to Moses saying, "Speak to the children of Israel that they bring me an offering. From everyone who gives it willingly with his heart, you shall make my offering." So the offering for the tabernacle, first of all, is to be done willingly. Interesting thing, right? We think about the Old Testament and the Old Testament law, and there's always this assumption that, oh, just everything is compulsory. You had to do it, you know, there was no choice, there was no heart in it. That's not really entirely the case. God, a lot of times, gives them commands that really get to their hearts and have them obey based on what's in their heart relative to what he's asking for. So that's the case here, and especially with the tabernacle. He wants the tabernacle built, no doubt, by people who want to have a place to worship him and to approach him, which is exactly what it's all about. And the more they wanted to do that, obviously, the more they would be willing to give. And as it turns out, they'll be extraordinarily willing to give. They want God with them. And a place to worship him as they're in the wilderness. So that's how it starts out. The items to be offered were gold and silver, bronze, blue, purple, scarlet thread, fine linen, goat's hair, ram skins dyed red, badger skins, acacia wood, oil, spices, onyx stones, and stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate. So lots of stuff. He's not asking for money because they're not going to go out and buy anything, right? There's nobody much to buy from, probably. But they're going to make the tabernacle out of things that they had or were available for them to get. Now, remember, when they left Egypt, last thing they did was they sort of plundered all the people. The people just gave them stuff to get them out of town, right? So they have a lot of riches, a lot of things to donate that, frankly, probably aren't going to be a lot of use to them in the wilderness. Some of these other things that are mentioned are things that they'd have along with them, the goats. Badgers are wild animals that live in arid areas, so they could probably get badger skins and all that kind of stuff. But all of this is available in one way or another. Maybe the most difficult thing to come up with out there would be the oil. There'd be acacia wood, which acacia is a tree that grows all over the Middle East and throughout Africa in arid areas, extremely hardy tree in dry climates, would probably be the only large tree of any kind other than maybe a palm tree that would even be available to them in the wilderness. But there are plenty of acacia trees and it's a good hard wood. So they would have access to that. And you'll see that the tabernacle is going to be made primarily out of acacia. as they go through. Yeah, and then got melted back down. But there's going to be a whole lot of it associated with the building of the tabernacle, the gold that went in the golden calf and then got melted down. The Lord commanded that the offering be used by the people, as I've already said, to make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. This is the purpose statement of the tabernacle. This is what it's all about. To us, maybe the bigger purpose is that it is a copy of heavenly realities that we experience today in Christ. Again, that's what the Hebrew writer brings out. We'll touch on that more a little bit later on. But interestingly, when you get to when they actually do everything that God is telling them to do, over in chapter 35, talks about the taking up of the offering for all of this. 35 verses 5 and 6, and probably most of us are familiar with this. Take from among you an offering to the Lord. Whoever is of a willing heart, let him bring it as an offering to the Lord, gold, silver, bronze, blue, purple, scarlet, and all of this. And they get so much that it's too much. And they're commanded to stop. 36 verses 5 and following, the people spoke to Moses saying, the people bring much more than enough for the service of the work which the Lord commanded us to do. So Moses gave a commandment, and they ceased it to be proclaimed throughout the camp, saying, let neither man nor woman do any work for the offering of the sanctuary. And the people were restrained from bringing. That didn't happen too often, you know, where you're trying to get donations for anything. And you have to say, oh, whoa, don't bring any more. We've got way too much. But it does happen among God's people ever occasionally. And here you see that wonderful heart that these people had to give for the purpose of just having a place to worship God. We can learn a lot from that attitude, and I think we have. Comments or thoughts about this to this point? We see the purpose of the tabernacle. We see what it's going to be made of. We see the willingness of the people to have a tabernacle and their willingness to sacrifice to do that. As we go forward in this next section, the tabernacle is to be made according to a pattern that God has, or would in these chapters, give them in an enormous amount of detail. It's not just, you know, when you think about building the ark that Noah built in the time of the flood, you have actually not a whole lot of specific detail to that. It's kind of a broad explanation of what it was made out of and how big it was and all. Not the case with the tabernacle. All of its furnishings, as we'll see, if I can speed up a little bit here. so much detail. Look at what it says, though, in 25 and verse 9. According to all that I show you, that is, the pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all of its furnishings, so just so you shall make it. On down in chapter 25 and verse 40, see to it that you make them according to the pattern which was shown to you on the mountain. So this pattern was shown to Moses by God when he was on the mountain. And then in chapter 26 and verse 30 again, you shall raise up the tabernacle according to its pattern which you were shown on the mountain. Now, the importance of all of this, as I have already hinted at a couple of times, is shown us in the book of Hebrews. In Hebrews chapter 8, particularly, the writer is talking about the tabernacle and its services. And in verse 5, he says that these things serve the copy and the shadow of heavenly things. So you guys saw the drawing, the artwork I had up there, what the tabernacle might have looked at. If you're here just a few minutes ago, you probably saw a couple guys carrying a model of a tabernacle, right, on a table out. And you look at that, and the full scale of the tabernacle and all that was in it and all that it did and all that was designed to do. And what the Hebrew writer is saying is that that is a model. The word copy there means some representation of, really, the idea of a representation, a copy or a shadow of the heavenly things that we experience. So our approach to God is symbolized in the tabernacle and later in the temple. And the temple or the tabernacle of today is the church. And God has ordained it to be crafted in a specific way, and we have a heavenly relationship with God that's not based as much on physical ceremonies, but on spiritual things. And it's a much different thing, but you see in the sacrifices, the worship, the atonement, all of that that was connected to the tabernacle, you see the connection. You see the representation of the tabernacle to the church today. There are two men who were especially gifted by God with wisdom. And I'm sorry, I got behind on my clicking. There you go. Two men who were especially gifted by God with wisdom and abilities in the crafts, who were appointed by God to head up the design, building, implementation, if you will, of the pattern that God had ordained. Bezalel and Oholiab. I always get that backwards. Oholiab. How about that? Get the syllables in the right places. In chapter 31, let's go over there and we'll look at a few verses about God selecting these men real quickly. The Lord spoke to Moses in verse 1 of chapter 31. See, I've called by name Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur of the tribe of Judah, and I filled him with the Spirit of God and wisdom and understanding and knowledge and in all manner of workmanship to design artistic works, to work in gold, silver, and bronze, cutting jewels for setting and carving wood, to work in all manner of workmanship. I indeed have appointed him with him Aholiab, the son of Ahisamar of the tribe of Dan, and I put wisdom in the hearts of all the gifted artisans that they may make all that I have commanded you. So there were these two men who were the leaders of the implementation of the pattern, basically, but they also had a number of other artisans apparently that were working with them. God uses people with talent and uses them in their area of talent. He does that still today, doesn't he? And so that's a great lesson for us. There would be a lot for them to oversee and take care of, and it was no doubt the providence of God that he had men, probably trained by the Egyptians, if you think about it, in all of these sort of high-level skills of craftsmanship that they were, and we could be expert managers of all of this. So they're talked about, and their work is talked about, here in chapter 31, in chapter 35, and also in chapter 38. In verses 22 and 23 there, Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, and so on and so forth, with him, Aholiab, the son of Hisamach, the tribe of Dan, all of these, again, repeated their skills, sets, their appointment by God to this very, very important work. So it's all sort of underway now. Funds have been given, not funds, but materials have been given to build the tabernacle. The design of it will be revealed, and it will be built according to the pattern. So that brings us to the construction of itself, of the tabernacle itself, its size, the construction materials. And again, we won't get as deep into this as it probably deserves for a really detailed look at all of the aspects of this, but I think we'll go a little bit deeper than we normally do. So the tabernacle, as many of you know, was 30 cubits long and 10 cubits wide. Not really all that huge. Not as big as the space that we're in now, for instance. 45 feet by 15 feet is what it is. The holy place was 20 cubits long, 10 cubits wide. That's 30 feet by 15 feet. Many of you have living rooms that are bigger than that. So it's not a real large place. The most holy place was a 15 by 15 space, 15 feet by 15 feet, 10 cubits by 10 cubits. That assumes that we know what a cubit is, and we think we do, at least pretty close. Often it's said, of course, to be from one's elbow to the tip of a finger, usually about 18 inches. So a foot and a half is what we spitball it to be, at least. And I think that, from everything we can understand, is really close to accurate. So you see that commanded. And then in chapter 26, verse 15, the boards that are going to form the walls of the tabernacle, how they're to be constructed, there is quite a bit of instruction about that. For the tabernacle, you shall make, this is verse 15, you shall make the boards of acacia wood standing upright. 10 cubits shall be the length of a board, and a cubit and a half shall be the width of the board. So basically, you have this 1.5 cubits wide board, 10 cubits long, and you're going to stand those up, and that's going to be the height, 15 feet, of the tabernacle itself. So it would have a fairly high ceiling by our standards, about twice as high as your typical home ceiling inside your house. So the boards then were supposed to fit together, sort of not really tongue and groove, but something like that, with a little extensions on the end. And they'd be supported by poles that would be inserted in rings on the outside of the wall, so to speak, and held together that way, as well as with sockets that they'd be placed in at the bottom. Let me read a little bit more of this as he talks about in verse 17, or verse 16. 10 cubits shall be the length of the board, 1.5 cubits shall be the width of the board, then 2 tenons shall be in each board for binding one to another. And so there's like little tabs that you would stick the boards together. Then you shall make for all the boards, thus you shall make for all the boards of the tabernacle. And you shall make the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards for the south side. You shall make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under each of the boards for its 2 tenons. And for the second side of the tabernacle, the north side, there shall be 20 boards, and there are 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under each of the boards. For the far side of the tabernacle, the westward, you shall make 6 boards, and you shall also make 2 boards for the 2 back corners of the tabernacle. They shall be coupled together at the bottom, and so you have basically 3 walls, the long walls and the short wall at the back end, that are being described here. The front end, which would be the east side, the tabernacle would always face east, as the temple did when it was constructed. All 3 times it was constructed, always faced east to the rising of the sun. But you had then basically the 3 closed walls of the tabernacle is what's being described here. And you have the various sockets and what they're to be made out of, and the rings that you put the poles through to hold it all together. The posts and sockets also were made to hang the curtains on. You have posts, sockets, and clasps also being described to hang the curtains on for the tabernacle in verses 36 through 38. So you say, well, what does that look like? Great question, right? Have you got it all imagined in your mind? Could you draw it for me? It's difficult to read it, and how do I conceptualize that, right? Well, I think a lot of work has been done, thankfully, by some pretty good artists about this. So this would be a board. So made of acacia wood, it would have sockets, tenons on the side and tenons on the bottom, little tabs, if you will, to hold it. And that would be 1 board for the tabernacle. And then you would stick them together and hold them at the bottom with these what he's calling sockets to put them into, to hold them at the bottom. So that's kind of just the start of it. That's not all of the bracing to it, but you can see, you think about this, they're going to be in the wilderness for 40 years. And this thing is actually going to be used for long after that, as I've already said. So it has to be movable. It also has to be very sturdy and made out of materials that are going to last. So this is really a perfect design for everything that God's going to want out of the tabernacle. Of course, that's why he's given them this design so particularly. So that would be the wall. And then it's put together something like this. If you ever, play with Lincoln Logs or something when you're a kid, kind of putting everything together so you can build your little log cabin house. That's what you're seeing here. This all coming together. You see the poles in this diagram. In the back, this would be the back that we're looking at, and then the side there of the boards. Now, that's not nearly finished, but that's how it was put together. Then everything was supposed to be overlaid with gold. They had a tremendous amount of gold, no doubt, and we'll see a lot of gold being used in the construction of the tabernacle. So this would have been a very, very beautiful and, frankly, costly, if you had to pay money for it, structure. Exodus 36 and verse 34 is the passage that tells them to overlay all of this with gold. Yeah, once you get that gold on it especially, but the wood itself, just to move one of those boards, probably wouldn't be something you need a couple of guys for. But here's another diagram of how that all might have looked. You see the three sides, southwest and north, the crossbars, on the sides somehow, and then the front entrance, which is also described, how God wanted that with curtains and so on, that will be described a little bit later. That's a pretty good overview of what all that looked like. So it's God's dwelling place. He wants this to be covered. This structure that we've just seen is going to be covered with a good many different materials. And that he's going to be very specific about what materials to use and in what order to use them. And if he wants designs on them or even what color they're supposed to be, God specifies every last bit of that. There's no guesswork much involved in what God is expecting. So you start with fine linen woven with designs of cherubim. Now, the cherubim are these angelic type beings. They're the guardians to the presence of God, and they will be one of the few images that God ever allows the Israelites to make. And they are, I think, described somewhat in the book of Ezekiel, probably that's what you have in the book of Revelation in the throne scene, either that or seraphim, which were closely connected. So these beings, guardians of the presence of God, and they would be all around the tabernacle in various ways, woven into some of the fabrics, and then, of course, on top of the Ark of the Covenant, the mercy seat, they would be symbolic of coming into the presence of God, is the idea. So you have those commanded in chapter 26, verses 1 through 6. And you can read about the type of materials that were used. Fine woven linen in verse 1, and blue and purple and scarlet thread. The artistic designs, this is why you need artisans and artists. Artistic designs of the cherubim, woven into all of that. The length of each curtain was to be so long, and so on and so forth. And how they're to be attached, all of that is described. The loops that they were to make in the edges of the curtains, and then the loops that are made and the rod that holds all of that. So all of that is described in quite a bit of detail. Then you have how is the goat's hair going to be used? Well, you pick it up in chapter 26 and verse 7. You shall make curtains of goat's hair to be a tent over the tabernacle. You shall make 11 curtains. The length of each shall be 30 cubits. And so he's got the length of each one, how to fold them over, how to cover, as we would, think about when you were a kid building a tent in your living room so you get some structure that you drape the material over it to make your tent. And God describes exactly how that's to be done, the length of all of that material. Goat's hair would be very insulating, both for, cool and hot times, which you would have a lot of both in the desert. So this would be something to kind of regulate the temperature in there a bit. And then he went up with ram skins and badger skins, chapter 26, verse 14. talks about those. Let me look at that real quick with you. 26 and verse 14, you also so shall make a covering of ram skins dyed red for the tent, and a covering of badger skins for above that. So these are one on top of the other, very well insulated. It would be, because of these animal skins, waterproof, all of that, should there ever be any rain, which there probably wasn't a lot of. But again, holding temperature, there'd be quite a bit of weight to all of this, has already been mentioned, that would have to be accounted for. Then you have the veil, 26 and verse 31, describe, you shall make a veil woven of blue, purple, and scarlet thread, fine woven linen. It shall be woven with artistic designs of cherubim. You shall hang it upon the four pillars of acacia wood overlaid with gold. Their hooks shall be gold upon the four sockets. You shall hang the veil from the clasp. Then you shall bring the ark of the testimony in there. So this is the veil to the holiest place that's being described. And exactly how that would look, we have a pretty good idea of that from this description. Going to put the mercy seat on top of the ark of the testimony in the most holy place. That's verse 34. But getting on with these materials, you got the veil. You have this, the entrance curtain to the main entrance that's described in verses 36 and 37. You shall make a screen for the door of the tabernacle of a blue, purple, scarlet thread. This would be into the holy place now, the outer section of the main tabernacle. It's woven in this way, and have five pillars of acacia there to enter into. We'll see a diagram of that in a minute. Then you have the outer court, all surrounding this. There's a bigger courtyard that surrounds the tabernacle structure itself. And that courtyard, if you will, if we could call it that, was surrounded by a fence, if you will, 100 cubits long and 50 cubits wide. That's 150 feet by 75 feet. 150 feet by 75 feet. And the walls of the courtyard were 5 cubits high, made of fine linen. So this was more of a tent-like wall, if you will, just to be a visual block, so people just couldn't necessarily look straight into everything that's going on there, and a bit of a boundary around where the priests would do their work in the outside when they're offering sacrifices, and at the washing laver that was on the outside. So you're looking at all of that, and it would look again like this. You see the tabernacle proper, and then this outer court that's basically a tent wall. You see the entrance curtains to that. You see the entrance curtains to the tabernacle itself that have just been described, much higher than this 7.5-foot wall that they put up. The tent wall is about 7.5 feet, and then the much higher tabernacle itself. You see there, and even in this picture, the altar and the laver. We'll look at that more in a minute. This is an actual setup of the tabernacle out in the desert, in the very southern tip of Israel. It is on the northeast corner of the Sinai Peninsula, in an area almost certainly where Israel would have traveled. It's at the very top of the Gulf of Aqaba. So if the tabernacle wasn't actually pitched here at one point, it was probably pitched very close to here. So it's very realistic. So they followed all of these instructions. They built this. They didn't use the gold materials now, so that wasn't done. But other than that, it's an exact replica in terms of size and design that we just read about. It gives you a real good feel for what that might have looked like. This is in Timnah, the very southern tip of Israel. If you're thinking geographically, Cairo, modern Cairo, Egypt, is pretty much in the middle of the land where the land of Goshen used to be. And this is 450 miles, almost due east of Cairo. That's how far that is from where they had been in Egypt to this particular spot, which I said was undoubtedly near the area where they would have traveled. So that brings us to looking at the furnishings of the tabernacle. We'll go through this fairly quickly. I think most of you have some familiarity with this. I won't be able to read much, but we'll describe the furnishings of the tabernacle as are described in chapter 25 and also chapter 37. The first thing that we see is the Ark of the Covenant and the mercy seat, which I've already talked about a little bit. The particular artist on this one has the poles going at the narrow ends. I have seen other depictions of it with them going the other way. I'm not sure how they come up with that, but maybe somebody can tell me. But it was, the ark wasn't really all that big of a piece of furniture. 2.5 cubits long by 1.5 cubits wide, so 45 inches by 27 inches by 27 inches. Just a rectangular sort of cube. The lid, again, was called the mercy seat. So God's presence would be made known, manifested over that. That's where the high priest would go in, into his presence, and offer the blood for himself and the people once a year on the Day of Atonement. This contained the ark, as we've already talked about, some important artifacts for the, in the history of Israel. Right outside the holiest place, you had the golden altar of incense, described for us in chapter 30, verses 1 through 10. The end of that chapter as well, and again in chapter 37. The altar of incense was to burn a special incense that was a particular mixture. I'd like you to look at chapter 30, verses 34 and following. This is kind of an important point, I think. Chapter 30, verses 34 and following. God gave them the recipe for this incense that he wanted burned on this altar. The Lord said to Moses, take sweet spices, stacte and onycha and galbanum, I think it is, pure frankincense, these sweet spices, there shall be equal amounts of each. You shall make of these incense a compound according to the art of the perfumer, salted, pure, and holy. You shall beat some of it very fine, put some of it before the testimony of the tabernacle meeting. There I will meet with you. It will be most holy to you for us. But as for the incense which you shall not make any for yourselves according to its composition. It shall be to you holy for the Lord. Whoever makes any like it to smell it, he shall be cut off from his people. So here's a special recipe only to be used for the incense of the tabernacle. Anybody else make this incense or use this for any other purpose or even smell it, he's to be cut off from the people. And the use of that phrase typically means to be put to death, not just to be, you know, cast out. So it's a very serious crime. Why do you think God is interested in making this altar and this incense so, you know, particular, so specific, so special and different? Right. Coming into his presence. In the New Testament, anybody remember in the book of Revelation what the incense represents today? Prayers of the saints. Prayers of the saints. So here's a very special thing, right? God considers it special as we come up before him in our prayers, ascending to him. And that should be a very, very special thing. And that's when we're talking about prayer this year here at Eastside, to be a house of prayer. That's what God intended for the tabernacle and the temple. That's what he intends for his house today, that we be a house of prayer. We are, our prayers are the incense that come up before God. I think that's, again, I was behind on my clicking, sorry. But you had that. You had, quickly, you had the table of showbread, 12 loaves set out in a particular fashion. They were set out fresh, displayed there. When the bread was replaced, it was to be eaten by the priests in a holy place by themselves. So it had been in the tabernacle, it was holy, it was separated. And the 12, obviously, having to do with God's feeding of the children of Israel, 12 tribes. 12 is always going to represent the people of God some way or other. Then you have the golden lampstand. This was inside the tabernacle proper. Six branches and one lamp in the middle, so seven altogether. It was solid gold. In fact, about 75 pounds of pure gold. So that's a lot of gold. It would be, among other things, not only to illuminate the inside of the tabernacle, but a holy light. And so the oil that was to be used was to be pure. And the Jews later on came up with very specific traditions about how to purify this oil. Comes into the story of Hanukkah, the dedication, the rededication of the temple during the time of the Maccabees. Some of you may have studied that, where they ran out of oil, and miraculously, so they say, some burned for much longer than it should have been able to burn, so until they could make some more pure oil. But that became a really big deal. It was holy oil again. It was special. This was the light in the tabernacle. Then you had the place on the outside in the courtyard where the animals would be burned for sacrifice. This is the altar of burnt offering. It was 5 cubits by 5 cubits, so 7.5 feet by 7.5 feet, 4.5 feet tall or deep, if you will, with a bronze grate that they put the fire under that. They put the animal on top of that, just like you do when you're barbecuing, except this was 7.5 feet. So you could put a whole bull, right, in there. If it was, you know, you might have to roll them up a little bit, but you could do all of that kind of stuff. Big animals could go in there. And this would be, had poles on the side of it to be carried. A brazen altar made out of bronze. And here's the laver for washing, to wash the hands and feet of the priests as they went about doing the business. The laver, interestingly, was made of bronze mirrors that were donated by women who served in this area. So there were women servers taking care of, I guess, little things around the outside of the tabernacle. And they donated the materials for the making of this. So here's a picture of that. Up here, I think, is interesting as far as size goes. Here's an American football field. Here is the whole size, outer court, and inner temple or tabernacle part. It's much, much smaller than an American football field, as you can see. But you see all of the things here, the altar, the laver, and the inside. And if you looked at a cross-section of the inside, you'd have the lampstand, the showbread, the altar of incense, and the mercy seat in the holiest of all behind the veil. A couple of other things real quickly. During a census, each person 20 years old and above was to give a half atonement money for the upkeep of the tabernacle. This temple tax continued from that time all the way to the time of Jesus. You might remember Jesus having Peter go catch a fish with the temple tax money in its mouth, and he told Peter to give the temple tax for both himself and Peter. So that was still happening in the time of Jesus. Then you had, again, the anointing oil, like the incense for the altar. The anointing oil was used in the tabernacle. It was derived from a special recipe, which was not to be duplicated. It's holy. It shall be holy to you. Holiness is a theme. Separation. This is not like anything else you do. It's not like you may be using some similar things like you have in your homes, but it's different because God is special. You need to be special when you come to God. He's wanting the best from you. He's wanting it to be different. And so this concept of holiness that we'll look at a lot when we get into the sacrifices is introduced to us here. All right. I think we made it. Whew. Pick up there Sunday morning. Thank you all.